Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now, here's Chris Walton and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time is 8:38 on Bronco Monday. I'm Chris Walton, along with Bob Beeler, and Brent Hunsaker is here today from KBOI 2. And Bob, I think a lot of people probably went to bed early on Saturday night. And then Sunday morning, we're quite surprised.
I think they were, because the Boise State, if you went to bed around halftime, was down 35-17. It was worse before that, 28-3. But if you remember the Super Bowl, the Patriots were behind 28-3 and they came back. So maybe it's a good deficit to have. And Boise State was even down two touchdowns late in the game. Got a touchdown to a pass from Rippon to Modster with a minute 41 left to get within seven. Got an onside kick. Got another touchdown, and then sent the game to overtime. And the game was a lot like the Washington State game in that the team that was behind and came back seemed to have the momentum going into overtime, and that's what Boise State had.
Have you ever seen a better Boise State comeback?
Not in my time here. Okay. I mean, obviously, I've only been here, this is my 10th season, and most of the wins that they've had have been start to finish, and a lot of them, you know, especially in the Kellen Moore era, were easy start to finish. But, you know, I was trying to think of games that I broadcast in my 30 years at three different schools of, you know, where I would rate this. And as a football comeback, it's by far the best comeback. I had a basketball game my last season at UMass. We were down 22 to Syracuse at halftime and ended up coming back to win it. And the winner was going to the Garden for the NIT Final Four. So that would be the biggest basketball comeback I've ever done. But 28-3 in football, that's a big hurdle to climb, and they were able to do it.
We're going to have to start calling them the Cardiac Kids.
Well, I think they've had a few games that have been like this, because the games are against pretty evenly matched teams in the league. But the last few weeks, they've had games where they've gotten out. You know, they've been behind 7-0. They were behind 7-0 to Wyoming and in Nevada and Colorado State. So three of the last, I guess, four games, the opposing team has scored on the first possession. But most of the time, they've been down 7 points and come back. But this one was pretty big.
Yeah, when Colorado State scored on the first possession, the first thing I thought was, okay, we're going to win 41-14 again. But then all of a sudden, Colorado State scored again and again and again.
Well, there was a lot of big performances. Alexander Madison, I wouldn't be surprised if he isn't the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Week. 242 rushing, adds in another 44 receiving on three catches, scores three touchdowns. Rippon was magnificent at quarterback. I thought he made the right throws at the right time. Again, a lot of things had to go right. You had to get the onside kick, then you had to come in for another touchdown. And at the end of the game, you know, Colorado State's inside the 5-yard line. I mean, you get a fumble at that point.
And Cozart didn't seem to throw much when he was in there.
He was in more to run and do some things. And the play distribution was well for Rippon in this game. And I think one of the things that has impressed me about the coaching staff this year is that they look at the opponent and decide what they need to do. I don't know that I've been with a team that has had more varied game plans in a season than this one. And they've done it because I think they have a lot of good pieces, a lot of pieces that do different things, much like a chessboard where, you know, one piece moves one way, one piece moves another way, and that's, you know, what they've been able to work, and it has. They're 8-2, and more importantly, the win puts them at 6-0 in the conference. Colorado State has been eliminated, and all they need to do is win one more of two to get to the championship game, Air Force this week at home or the last game at Fresno State, but they'd certainly like to win them both.
Yeah. And who can figure out Air Force? I mean, they've been all over the place this year. I mean, they've had a tough season, but I mean, they played Michigan competitively.
They played Michigan well. Then they go play Army, Army has one of its better teams they've had in years, and they get less than 100 yards running. They easily won against Colorado State. They lost a tough one to Wyoming. So they have been up and down. When Air Force, as you say, Brent, when they've been good, they've been very good, and when they've been bad, they've been bad. So I think it'll be almost like you know, the old game show, will the real Air Force please stand up? But Boise State's lost three in a row to Air Force. Air Force has given them fits, so I think Boise State's going to have all they want to handle come Saturday.
And we heard this morning that with the eighth win of the season, Coach Harsin's contract gets extended.
Right.
Gets
a bump. Yeah, that's nice. So I'm sure that, you know, I would think he'd probably say the same thing. As they're winning the game in overtime, I don't think he's thinking that. I think he's thinking that what a comeback, And we've, you know, left ourselves still undefeated in the Mountain West, and probably somebody may have had to mention that to him, or maybe you think about it coming home on the plane. But I don't think that was top of his mind. I think just a tremendous comeback, you know, to win the game over what I thought was a pretty good Colorado State team.
Well, like I said this morning, I mean, when they were down 28-3, I think people were thinking he wasn't going to get an extension. KBOY News time is 8:43. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with more. We're back. It's Bronco Monday. It's 8:45. I'm Chris Walton with Bob Beeler, and Brent Hunsaker of Channel 2 is here today.
And Bronco Monday, a little more fun to do than it looked like it was going to be. I guess because Bronco Sunday ended up being better than Bronco Saturday.
Exactly, right.
And after the game, Coach Harsin came out to the field, and we interviewed him, talked with him about the game, and talked about the mentality of coming back when your team's down 28-3 at one point.
Well, we just talked about it at halftime, just one competitive play at a time. And it really came down to that. I just told them, don't worry about the score. You know, that'll work itself out. If we just go out there and we play one competitive play at a time, and we focus on that, and then we obviously have to execute and go make plays, which is what our players and coaches did, then we have an opportunity to get back in the game. It's never over. I mean, we're still early in the game. It's halftime. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, were down, and that's just what normal people do. They don't keep fighting, and I asked our guys just to be abnormal, which they do on a daily basis. The players, the coaches, they did all the work. They did the adjustments, and they went out there, and they executed, and they kept calm when they needed to, and they made the plays and the calls that they had to win the game.
And it was, again, a great comeback for Boise State. Followed up with a question on if maybe there was a play that he could see as the turning point to the comeback.
Well, I think in the second half, Madison's run for a touchdown was a big one. I thought that changed the momentum of the game. You know, our defense, we had opportunities. There was two touchdown return opportunities on turnovers that we weren't able to get. One was because of a penalty and one that we dropped. And then we had another turnover in there as well that Layton had that we probably could have had their better field position. So, you know, we did some things on D that were good. And we had, you know, if those balls go in our favor, the game's completely different. We're not in the same game that we are right now. But at the end of the game, you know, the biggest play was that we recovered that fumble. And the ball was, you know, for the Broncos and in our hands, and we were able to win the game.
And again, the play he was talking about was a 70-yard run from Alexander Madison. They were down 35-17 at the half, first drive of the third quarter, and less than a minute in, you now make it 35-24, 11-point game, which doesn't quite seem as daunting. And momentum kind of stayed with Boise State for a while. They get an interception at midfield, short field. They get another drive. So two drives into the third quarter, you're back within four at 35-31.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it felt possible.
It did feel possible.
Where at 28-3, it kind of felt impossible.
Right, and then just kept battling. And, you know, you get an onside kick, which is kind of rare. I would place at the end of the game when you need an onside kick, probably about a 1 in 5 chance that you will get the onside kick. And then they took advantage. And the fumble at the end, I mean, if Air Force is a game coming up. If Colorado State had been able to score, you assume they make the extra point. I guess somebody asked me if I thought they would go for two to win. I said, I don't think so, but I guess they could have. But, you know, you could have been still playing, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're going first, and maybe then the pressure would be on you.
It's kind of nice that we don't have to know.
We will never know. And, again, as we've talked about, Air Force coming up, last home game of the season, 8:15 on Saturday, asked Coach Harsin to look ahead to the Falcons.
And if our guys will do that, we got some guys banged up. We got to get some guys healthy. Air Force is going to be a team that, you know, we've had some struggles with. And we'll get a plan put together. But right now, we struggled tonight. We found a way to win. You know, I hope that's something that these guys take away from a game like this. And, you know, we can figure it out. We can work hard. And a lot of those things that we talk about, when things don't go our way and we respond a certain way, it showed up tonight. That's the game of football. And this time of year, that's what it's all about. How are you going to do that? Who's the toughest team? Not just physically, but who's the toughest team mentally? We're going to find that out.
And again, Air Force coming up, need to win one of the last two, either Air Force or the last week at Fresno State, to be the Mountain Division champions. And I would think that you win them both. I think it'd be a lock if you win them both, that the championship game on the first Saturday in December would be here.
Boise State's entire history, you never know what's going to happen when we face an option team.
At least in recent years. But, you know, they've lost three games in a row to Air Force. But they've all been different ways. One of them, like last year, I think the offense did not play one of its better games, and that's why they lost. Another year it was that they couldn't stop Air Force's pass, if you can believe that. And another year they gave it away on a lot of turnovers. So all three games, while they've lost to Air Force, were not the same way. It's not like, no, you can't stop the dive, you can't stop the pitch, you can't stop the quarterback, which are the three things you've got to stop in an option. But I think they'll be on point, and he mentioned injuries this time of the year. Everybody's getting banged up, so you know, you're hoping that you'll have a full, when I mean a full squad, your top players will be in there. You'll have people who you'll put out on the field, but you know, like in the last game, a couple defensive linemen didn't play. Hatata and Louie didn't play. The game before that, Moa and Miles didn't play. So it's one of these things when you get to the middle of November, it's tough.
Have we faced an offense like Air Force's offense so far this year?
Yeah, New Mexico's is fairly similar, a little bit different, but the idea of the option, and Boise State did a pretty good job against them. So we'll see if that can be true again on Saturday.
KBOY News time is 8:50. We'll be right back with Bronco Monday. We're back on Bronco Monday. KBOY News time is 8:52. I'm Chris Walton with Bob Beeler, and Brent Hunsaker from Channel 2 is here today.
And tomorrow, coming up on Bronco Tuesday at this same time, cross country, both men's and women's teams have qualified for the national meet coming up a little later in the month, and we'll be hearing from them. So congratulations on earning a spot again this season, so that's good for them. That'll be on Bronco Tuesday, and then we'll have our coaches show, Coach Harsin Weekly, Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And the other thing we want to pass along coming up Thursday and Friday, the basketball team is in a tournament in South Carolina. The games will be played in the daytime. Thursday's pregame will start at 11:30, and for the Thursday and Friday games only, the basketball game will be heard over on 1350. That's the AM side of sports radio, The Ticket, and instead of on KBOI, because you folks are having a show, and Rush Limbaugh's having a show, and so it'll go over to AM 1350.
But speaking of basketball, they did have a good weekend.
They really did. Won the first game against Eastern Oregon, 104 points, racked that up. And then yesterday, solid win over Southern Utah. Interesting strategy. Southern Utah decided they wanted to take Chandler Hutchison out of the game. He had only 7 points, but led the team in rebounds and assists. And other people scored a lot of points, namely Justinian Jessup and Alex Hobbs. So we'll see if that strategy will be used later in the season or whether you just try to play Chandler straight up.
Well, I'm kind of glad the other people did step up.
They did, you know, absolutely.
Mean, we'll see against other teams, you know, whether that'll be possible. Southern Utah, you know, being what they are,
right? It's not the season is starting for the basketball team, sort of like a staircase.
Yeah,
you had Eastern Oregon in the first game, and they're an NAIA school, and you win with 104 points.
Sure,
the game with Southern Utah was more difficult than against Eastern Oregon. Now you go to this tournament in South Carolina. Your first game is with UTEP, Texas El Paso, which will be better than Southern Utah. And then if you get by them, you're probably going to see a team that was in the Final Four last year, and that being the University of South Carolina, because if you win, I would assume they would probably win as well in their first-round game against Illinois State. So you're looking at some pretty high-caliber competition coming up this week in South Carolina for them.
It looks like they're going to be tested.
Yes. I think it also looks like they're going to be pretty good, too. It's amazing how much difference a year makes in that they plug some holes. You had Paris Austin transfer. Nick Duncan graduated. You replaced them with the two grad transfers, Lexus Williams and Christian Sengfelder, and then the three sophomores that were freshmen last year, and Hobbs, Jessup, and Dickinson all look like they're significantly better sophomores.
It's easy for me to remember that South Carolina made the Final Four because in all the brackets I filled out, I didn't have them making the Final Four in any of them, which is fairly typical, actually.
Well,
there's always
they were the surprise team last year. So, again, basketball off and running, and football 8:15 Saturday night, take a nap again, and maybe we won't have to go to overtime this week.
I mentioned that I did. I took a nap Saturday afternoon.
You were smart.
Which is why I was able to stay awake for the entire game.
I'll bet you there are people, seriously, who went to sleep. Todd's folks, Todd was telling the story that they recorded the game and then didn't record enough. If you're going to record the game and you're ever, you don't want to, first of all, it's hard enough not to know who won.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go to sleep, nobody's going to tell you. But always record an extra hour or so at the end of the game because you never know.
And I've told people this for years, that I learned my lesson back, you know, when the Houston Oilers were leading the Buffalo Bills 35-3 and ended up losing, was it 41-38, with Frank Reich as the quarterback. You never take anything for granted.
No, and that's what's beautiful about sports is, I mean, I guess if you're leading by three touchdowns and there's 20 seconds left, physically it may not be possible to score, get the ball back, score again. But you never know. I've seen some strange comebacks. But that was a great one for Boise State. Easily the biggest comeback that I've ever done. Very exciting game. Somebody said it was the most exciting game you've done. I think for me, it's still the win in the opening game of the season in 2010 against Virginia Tech.
Bob, thanks for joining us this morning. It's 8:56. Brent Hunsaker and I will be back after the top of the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about some things going on here in the state of Idaho. And one of those is, how much information are we giving the feds? And the other has to, believe it or not, do with heroin and how we're testing it. It's 8:56. We'll be back.
If you're talking about it...
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KDOI.
9:06, I'm Chris Walton with special guest host Brent Hunsaker from Channel 2 today.
Hello, hello.
Much ado, of course, made earlier this year when Trump administration, I guess, asked all 50 states for their voter registration rolls. Immediately, there were a few that just said, okay, a few states, and then other states said, wait just a minute, why should we give this to you? And Secretary of State Lawrence Denny from Idaho said basically that... they could only have the voter registration information available under Idaho law, which was name, address, party affiliation, and election participation history.
Yeah, and then he also assured us that personal information that's also collected as part of the voter registration process, that would be our date of birth, our driver's license number, last four digits of Social Security number, that all of those things would not be released, is not possible under Idaho's public records law.
Yeah, now Chris Kobach is the vice chairman of the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, and that's the commission that I was mentioning. Apparently, despite the fact that our Secretary of State, Lawrence Denny, assured us that stuff would be, you know, like the Social Security numbers and whatnot, would not be given out, he had already given that to Kobach. In February, Lawrence Denny gave Kobach information on all the registered Idaho voters, including two pieces of voters' non-public personal information, their birth dates, and abbreviated Social Security numbers. Now, that's not your entire Social Security number,
no,
obviously.
No, last four digits.
Yeah. And that was not the first time Kobach received the same information about Idaho voters in 2014, 2015, and 2016.
Which is really strange until why was he getting voter information from those years as well as last year when he was, you know, part of this commission that was supposedly investigating voter irregularities, I guess we should say.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's because he wore two hats here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the explanation we were given. And you saw this. I mean, you know, we you guys had it on television. Everybody had it that, you know, he was up there with Chris Kobach was up there with the president and essentially saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with this. In addition to his role on the president's commission, since 2011, Kobach has been the Secretary of State of Kansas. And in Kansas, he runs a program that collects voter registration records from around the country and compares them to ferret out voters who may be gaming the system. So essentially, it was for the state of Kansas that they were trying to, you know, make sure that people hadn't voted twice, I guess, or even more.
But to get voter information from Idaho when he was Kansas's Secretary of State, that is
odd. Yeah, it is. And technically, I guess our Secretary of State wasn't giving it to the federal government, but he was giving it to another state and to a guy that ultimately ended up being the chairman of a government commission.
And it was run through something called CrossCheck. I don't quite understand what that entails, but CrossCheck is a program or something designed to detect voter fraud.
Yeah, essentially it just means that somebody can't, you know, cross the border and vote twice, I guess, or somebody can't vote early in one state, vote early in another state, vote early in a third state, and then, you know, show up and vote on election day in a different state. The Kansas Secretary of State's office accepted its initial year of data for that program in 2006, And our state, Idaho, voluntarily joined the program in 2013 and began sending it voter data in 2014, which, as I said before, technically that's not sending it to the federal government. It just kind of turns out that way. Lawrence Denny's predecessor, Ben Yasursa, first signed Idaho up for the program, and amid news of security risks tied to the program's management, Yasursa said, hey, why don't we get out of this now?
Yeah.
Let's stop doing it.
But apparently we continue to do it.
Yeah.
And what's so worrisome about this is that it seems that CrossCheck isn't doing enough to safeguard our data, our information that is being cross-checked with other states.
Yeah, exactly.
Under CrossCheck's agreement with each participating state, all data will be transferred to and from the Kansas Secretary of State using industry-standard encryption technology and passwords. But what news articles are saying is that's not happening.
Yeah, it kind of seems to be in English.
Yeah.
Just a little different than encryption.
Yeah.
In a story published last month, ProPublica, an investigative reporting nonprofit, reported that CrossCheck's data is uploaded to an unencrypted FTP server, and the industry standard is to use SFTP servers, which are encrypted, and plain old FTP is not encrypted. Now, I understand that about as much as I understand trigonometry, which is not much, but encrypted supposed to be, and it's not.
Yeah, the S in front of the FTP, the SFTP, I'm assuming means secure.
Yeah. That makes the most sense. Now, here's how CrossCheck works. Each state uploads its voter rolls to a computer server hosted by the Arkansas Secretary of State's office, not Kansas. Then the Kansas Secretary of State's office then pulls the data and compares all the records, looking for matching first and last names and birth dates. The results are uploaded to the server. Each state retrieves its respective report of possible duplicates or multiple votes. And once that process is complete, the data is deleted from the server. Kinda. Participating states are not obligated to do anything with the cross-check data. And the initial four participating states, and they're all right there together in the Midwest, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri, collectively submitted 9 million voter registration records in 2006. This year, CrossCheck collected 98.5 million records from 28 different states, and that included 797,534 from the state of Idaho. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And here you have the Idaho Statesman that, through a public records request, obtained emails between CrossCheck, the company or the program, whatever, mm-hmm. and Idaho officials. And these emails confirm that CrossCheck has repeatedly sent the server's address and login information all in one email to more than 50 people around the country.
Which is not exactly encryption.
Yeah, and this practice was continued over a period of time. So you got to assume that the 50 people change, that it's not always the same 50 people.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, too. So more than 50 people
have the access to the server as well as the passwords to gain the information.
You know, and I guess the attitude has been, oh, well, it's probably safe. Which is a great attitude to have, unless that isn't true. Wow. The unredacted login information was clearly visible to those people in the documents, provided by the Idaho Secretary of State's office. Indivisible Chicago, which is an anti-Trump group, also received the unredacted cross-check credentials through an Idaho Public Records request. And that's according to the tech news website Gizmodo, and they reported on that just Thursday. They asked several security firms to examine the server. The results are troubling, to say the least, the website reported. They not only confirm the findings contained in ProPublica's report, but further reveal an alarming array of previously unreported weaknesses in the network hosting the CrossCheck server. So I suppose the assumption now is that whatever information the state of Idaho has on you voting, everybody has it.
Well, and the question is how vital is that information? And it's not like they're giving out credit card information where someone can steal it and go buy something on Amazon in your name and get away with it. But still, it's troubling because there doesn't seem to be, at least on CrossCheck's part, much care given to the protection of personal information. And in our day and age, I mean, that's the coin of the realm now is information. And my personal information has to be protected if I'm to continue to function as an adult in this data-driven, technology-driven society.
One would assume. And I can remember the first time we talked about this, there were people that were up in arms about how, you know, the states, you know, I can't believe the federal government is asking for all this private information. And then there were other people who called up and said, if you think they don't already have it, then you're crazy. KBOY News time is 9:16. If you'd like to be part of the conversation this morning, 208-336-3700. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News time is 9:21. Chris Walton along with Channel 2's Brent Hunsaker today as my guest host.
Sidekick.
Yeah, well, there we go. Guest host, sidekick.
Straight man.
KBOI rewards code for today is information, I-N-F-O-R-M-A-T-I-O-N, information. Go to KBOI.com and enter that word. And right now, I think we'd like to take the first correct caller at 208-336-3711 who can identify the Paul J. play of the game from the 59-52 win Saturday night, also known as Sunday morning, over Colorado State. And if you are the first correct caller, again, 208-336-3711, you will win a $50 gift certificate to Lock, Stock, and Barrel in downtown Boise. Great steaks and more.
Very nice.
The more is good, too.
Would that be dessert?
Well, it could be dessert. It could be salad. They get they still have salad bar, too. That's fantastic. There was a. You remember there was a time when if you went out, the place generally it was like in the 70s and 80s that every place had a salad bar.
Right, some better than others.
Yeah, and then gradually a lot of them just started phasing that out. But hey, not Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
Very nice.
What we've been talking about, it was the information that is provided by the state of Idaho by the Secretary of State's office. Not to the federal government necessarily, but just given to other people. In this case, a database run by the state of Kansas, which oddly enough, you give it to the state of Arkansas and then it's run by the state of Kansas.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that part, but apparently some states are not pleased with this database. Not everyone's participating anymore. Yeah. Alaska dropped out in 2014. Florida, Oregon, Washington dropped out in 2015. And then earlier this year, Massachusetts said, hey, we're out too. So apparently not everyone is participating in this cross-check database anymore.
Now, we're going to switch it up here. Do we have a caller on the line? What's okay.
All right, Mark.
Punch him up there if you would.
There we go. Now, they give me buttons over here, Mark, to push, and I didn't know if I pushed the right one. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, all right. Good.
Mark, can you tell us the Paul J. play of the game from that incredible game the other night?
Yeah, it was ripping to row, 6-yard touchdown pass with 57 seconds left in the game.
Let's hear it.
Hampton snapped to Rippon. Big blitz. Rippon hit as he throws, but gets it to Rowe, who makes the catch. Touchdown. Reaches out for the goal line. 6 yards, and the Broncos are an extra point away from tying this with 57 seconds left.
Well done, Mark.
All right.
You've won that gift certificate to Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
All right. Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Right. Hang on the line. Todd, you've already got his information. Okay, well, okay. Then you can just go, Mark, and we'll take care of you later.
All right. Thank
All
you.
Right, thanks. We do need to go to a break, and we'll do that. When we come back, we will switch it up a little, and we'll talk about the Idaho State Police drug lab. These are forensic scientists. Like if you watch NCIS, it's like Abby, basically. It's those people. And they have to test heroin. And apparently this is a fairly slow process, and they need more people to do it. We'll tell you the statistics about that and why they have such a backlog coming up. KBOY News time is 9:26.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News time, 9:36. It's Idaho Talks Live. Just wanted to mention this very quickly, that some breaking news that Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has now apparently publicly said he believes the women who have accused Judge Roy Moore in Alabama of inappropriate contact, you know, years ago, and that he says Moore definitely should step aside. So that's something I guess we didn't really expect to have happen so soon.
Well, it's interesting because so far most who have commented on this on the Republican side have said if he is guilty, then he should withdraw.
Yeah, if the stories are true.
Yeah, if.
Yeah.
So they put that caveat in front of everything they say. But this time, there appears to be no if.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell is the highest Republican office holder in who has now said that he just simply believes the women. So we'll get to that. I mentioned this before we went to the news. Forensic scientists with the Idaho State Police are struggling to keep up with the caseload of evidence waiting to be tested for heroin and other opioids. Now, we hear about the opioid problem all the time, and of course heroin goes along with that. And for a long time, I think my attitude was, well, you know, that's too bad for those communities where this sort of thing happens. But clearly, you know, here in Idaho, as far as I know, we sure don't have much of a problem with that sort of thing. Well, we don't have a problem with it in the circles that I run in. So I didn't know much about it. But apparently there's an awful lot of it out there.
Yeah, the opioid abuse problem is and heroin is part of that under that umbrella.
Yeah.
It's just it's rampant now. I didn't realize it until we started doing stories on it. And I go, my goodness, because all my kids are grown and gone. And so I guess I've been disconnected in that sense. But I was shocked by the numbers that we're seeing.
When we had that tent city here a year or two ago, and they were trying to clean that up and figure out someplace else for the homeless population to go where they could stay indoors in beds and things like that and wouldn't have to be in tents out in a parking lot someplace. They ended up cleaning up all the tents, and it was a strange thing based on what they found. They found a whole lot of things that had been stolen from people's yards in the North End. They found bicycles and all sorts of things, but they found an awful lot of heroin needles as well. Apparently, there was a huge problem with that sort of thing among the homeless population, and which, of course, just leads to more homelessness.
Well, and this draws us to this story now. This is from the Idaho Press Tribune, and what they're saying is that we don't have enough scientists at the labs, the state labs, to handle all of the cases that are coming in with regards to heroin and opioids. They said they have two analysts, and normally they can handle about 90 cases a month.
Yeah.
Well, in August, those two analysts had dumped on their desks 378 cases. So that's more than they would handle in 2 months.
See, now right there, that number surprises me for the state of Idaho. And I suppose it shouldn't. I should know that these things are going on out there. But it's just strange to me that there are 378 cases provided by the police in a month.
Yeah, 1 month.
Where there's a possibility of heroin.
Well, and you got to feel for these scientists. Okay, they're already in a high pressure situation. They're dealing with drugs. They've got to do the proper testing.
Right.
They've got to get it right because this is for court. This is for investigations. Also, on top of that, they've got more than they can handle. And then on top of that, you've given them something that could kill them.
Yeah, essentially because of the fentanyl.
Right.
It's quite often heroin is combined with fentanyl, and that is a drug that can be absorbed through the skin and as such can cause a fatal overdose. So, naturally, all the things they handle with gloves, and they have certain procedures that they have to adhere to. But, if something just touches your skin somehow.
Right. And that could give you a fatal overdose.
Yeah.
Just by skin contact with some of the, and it doesn't require a lot from what I understand. It can be a relatively minor amount, but that contact can be fatal. So here we have the scenario. Two people handling, at least for the month of August, handling twice the amount of cases that they can normally handle in a month.
Right.
So you're putting a lot of pressure on them. And above and beyond that, they've got a They've got a substance that they're working with that could kill them. That's a bad combination where you're putting people under that kind of pressure. And, oh, by the way, you're dealing with something that could end your life.
Yeah. Now, they have they keep that Narcan.
They have a couple doses. They said that they keep on hand. Yes.
And that's what you would take if you have an overdose. So they have a couple of doses of that on hand just in case something bad happens. And Karina Owsley is an Idaho State Police Department scientist, and she did say that they did recently add a third drug analyst. But again, right now they're dealing with even adding a third one is still putting them way behind because, I mean, even assuming that each one of them can do 90 cases a month, that's what, 270?
Yeah,
and they had in August 378.
So it's still not enough.
Yeah.
I feel for them. I'm sympathetic with the scientists that work in the labs because they're under pressure not only to do a bunch of cases, but also to get it right, consistently get it right. And above and beyond everything else, if they make a mistake, oh, by the way, if it touches your skin, you could get a fatal overdose.
Now, the good news there is there were 378 cases where they were testing things for heroin, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all 378 had heroin.
Yeah.
However, the suspicion, is there, and so chances are quite a few of them did. But I don't know, that still just kind of gets me that for the longest time, I just really didn't realize there was much of a problem in Idaho.
Well, and that tells you that as this problem grows in Idaho, I mean, we're at a loss to catch up. Investigators and lab technicians are being overwhelmed by this.
Yeah, apparently they weren't... they're aware of the problem, obviously, now, but they weren't expecting it to be this bad.
That's how fast it's growing. I think it's taking a lot of us by surprise.
We'd like to hear from you this morning if you'd like to be part of the conversation. 208-336-3700. It's Chris Walton and Brent Hunsaker. We will take a short break and be right back.
Dale's coming up on 670 KBOI. This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
Idaho Talks Live 948. Quick sports note, Carlos Beltran, who played Major League Baseball for 20 seasons and finally won... a World Series championship with the Astros this year, has retired from baseball, which is probably something he wanted to do a couple of years ago, but kept trying to win that ring.
And to win it with the Astros, because when Beltran joined the Astros a few years ago, they were more likely to be called the Lastros.
That's a good point. And he came from the Mets, where he had high hopes, and it didn't work out. A couple of instant messages here. Now, earlier we were talking about voter information, Idaho voter information, not necessarily being sent to the federal government. But Chris Kobach is the guy from Kansas who is the chairman of the federal commission that wants voter information, as much voter information as possible from all 50 states. And he was the one that you saw on television with the president here several months ago, and that's when the uproar started about people saying, hey, our voter information is good for our state, but we don't necessarily want to have a federal database of all of our information. But it turned out that Idaho and other states, about 28 other states, in fact, had been sending information to this guy, Chris Kobach, all along, because Kansas had a program that they ran simply to help you figure out whether people were voting in the other states and also voting in your state illegally. Like I said, it wasn't all 50 states. It was 28 of them. It started out with just four that were all border states of each other. And that kind of made sense to me because, somebody could vote and then go across the border and vote again. It wouldn't be difficult, especially if you vote early. But it turned out that for years now, since 2014, I guess, is the first year that we did it. We signed up in 2013, and in 2014 through the present, Idaho has been giving all of our information to Chris Kobach, but for this database that is run by the state of Kansas, which technically isn't a federal database, as I said, but on the other hand, is kind of like one.
It is.
It's a little
quasi. Federal database because it's a sharing of information from these states. And the concern was is that this this program, CrossCheck, was not securing the data properly.
Right.
That it was out in the open on an FTP, not secured site, that the passwords were being shared in the open with as many as 50 people at a time.
Yeah.
We assume that these are responsible people from other states, but they're still being sent to them in, in emails.
It was supposed to have been encrypted. It wasn't, for the most part.
Right.
Got a couple of instant messages here. Gary of Emmett says, regardless if the information in the database of voters can be used for identity theft, the more places your information is stored, the greater the risk, which I guess makes sense. Every big data breach is another chance to have your information stolen. Hackers seem to penetrate even the most secure systems. My advice is try to limit the times that you respond to digital requests for your information. And
but the problem is yeah. that once you give out your information just once, you lose control of it.
Well, yeah, essentially, it's out there.
And you depend on the state, whether it's the DMV or it's the elections office. You depend on the state to protect that information and make sure that it doesn't get disseminated out there or get hacked and become public knowledge on the dark web.
Mm-hmm. Patrick of Caldwell also wrote in to say, morning, guys, it doesn't matter how insignificant the data. And again, this sounds like almost the same letter. It is Denny, meaning Idaho Secretary of State Lawrence Denny. It is Denny's responsibility to safeguard our non-public information. According to your reporting, some of our private information was given to someone in Kansas who did not have legal access to said information. Denny said he could not give that information to the feds because Idaho law prevented him from releasing it. As such, wouldn't the release of this info to anyone be an equal violation of Idaho law? So Denny violated the law by releasing it to the one party, but refused to violate the law by releasing it to the feds. Glad to see there is integrity in the Secretary of State office. So, Patrick, not a fan of Lawrence Denny at this point.
No, he's very critical of him. And, of course, others have been critical as well. Matt Erpelding, who's a Democrat in the state legislature, has been critical of what's happening here. And the quote that I saw from him in the Idaho Statesman was, he says, quote, "I think it's time for the legislature to look at whether or not we want to be sending our information into a system that a majority of the surrounding states of Idaho don't participate in. So finding substantial voter fraud is highly unlikely and at the same time increases our vulnerability to hackers." And again, that's Representative Erpelding.
Yeah. And I guess it was just kind of an arbitrary decision to, you know, be part of CrossCheck in the first place. Now, in many ways, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. Let's make sure that there's not voter fraud going on. I mean, that just as a sentence sounds like a good idea. However, when you start sending out a great deal of information that isn't necessarily privy to anyone or isn't supposed to be anyway, it puts a wrench in things.
Well, and the article points out in the Statesman that there have been attempted hacks in several state voter systems. I think they said 21. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find that. But there have been other states that have had their voter information hacked. Now, these hackers are good. I mean, they've gotten into banks. They've gotten into insurance companies that supposedly had all sorts of layers of protection. And it doesn't sound like there was a whole lot of protection with this CrossCheck program that was being run out of the state of Kansas.
You know, the more news that you hear about hacking, the more it just becomes apparent that there really isn't anything that's foolproof.
No, there isn't. And mistakes can be made, and there's some hacks that happen that shouldn't have happened because somebody simply didn't do something right. But in many cases, these hacks go through some complex security yeah. measures and still manage to get the information.
But it appears that Idaho probably will be withdrawing from the current CrossCheck program. So, probably a good idea. And that is about it for today. Brent Hunsaker, thanks very much for being the co-host this morning.
Thank you for having me. I
appreciate it.
I guess I have an option for one more day next week.
Yeah, we'll check your contract.
Unless you've withdrawn that option.
We'll see if you become a free agent. We'll have to check with your We'll have your people call my people or something of that nature. 9:55. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Paul J. will be back tomorrow. We'll see you then.